Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Wall-to-wall Peyton Davis this morning. Joining us from the great frozen north is our favorite chef, Kim Holmes. Kim, good morning.
Good morning, Mac. How are you?
How are you? How's the frozen north?
Frozen still.
Is it? Damn, I hate that.
Last week was the first day in 63 days that it was above freezing.
Congratulations, Jay!
Yeah, we're in the 30s.
Whoa!
The day, 20s and 30s, and then it freezes at night.
That's good though.
That's a slow thaw. And next week we hit a couple of 40s.
Ooh!
So it's pretty exciting around here.
People don't realize that, like, you hit 40?
Man, that's shorts.
Hello, baby. I mean, 40 feels warm. 40, I always say there's a difference in the exchange rate between California and North Dakota, because you get the 40 here, and it's cold. 40, right, in I don't know why, but 40 in North Dakota is not cold. And I don't know how to explain it, but it ain't cold. And I would, anyway.
So. You say this, Matt. It's a dry cold.
Exactly. It's a dry cold. That's good. That's good. Now, how'd the hockey team do last week? Did we sweep or split?
They swept last week.
Ooh.
They're playing in Denver tonight. They flew out of here Wednesday, just a pinch ahead of the blizzard.
Yeah,
and Denver was totally closed, so they had to fly to Albuquerque and bus to Denver. It took them a night, 500 miles, one night on the road to get to Denver, and so they finally got to Denver yesterday afternoon.
So now, what's the deal? The hockey team, University of North Dakota hockey team, which we all know and love, do they have to sweep this weekend to get in the, or does the whole thing depend not only on this weekend, but how they do in their own league tournament, and then that'll decide whether they play in the NCAAs?
That's right. They have to win 2 out of 3 in Denver to get into the tournament. If they don't win 2 out of 3, they're done for the year. So this is a do or die for them.
Okay.
If they get into the tournament, they have a good shot at getting in the national tournament. If they get in the league tournament next weekend,
got it.
So it's a fingernail biting time for the Sioux fans.
There you go.
But you and I did a couple of games in Denver, and you know what a great city that is, and how big the Denver Sioux fan base is. There are a lot of ex-Sioux graduates out there in Denver, and so they'll have a good crowd.
Well, you know, I don't know. I don't know that there's a lot of them, but here's the thing about people that live in North Dakota. They got nothing else, okay? They got nothing else. Right? And so they all show up to the same shit. It's like, so when, like, you know, like when you see somebody, like for instance, I think Patrick and I don't remember, and it was some of the girls, I don't know which ones though, we went to see Notre Dame play.
Yeah.
I said to them, so we pull into this lot in right outside of the Coliseum, which is, you know, which is South Central LA. And there's somebody that's wearing a University of North Dakota Fighting Sioux hockey jersey. So now,
yes.
It's like if you're a 49er fan and you see somebody else in a 49er jersey, you don't go over to them and say, hey, you're a 49er fan. But because there's nobody that lives in North Dakota, if you see somebody else that has something on that says North Dakota on, you say hi to them. So we get out of the car and we said, you're UND hockey fans? And they're like, they said, you betcha. It's like,
you betcha. That's the right answer.
It was rich. So then they wind up being from Grand Forks. Well, do you know this guy? Do you know that guy? Oh yeah, I know him. it's awesome being from a small state.
We flew back with the team in 2016, the year they won the NCAA championship, to Burlington, Vermont. Okay, and they have a barn that was smaller than the old Ralph, had about 2,000 seats or something, and 10% of those seats were filled with Sioux fans. Burlington, Vermont, for God's sakes. I mean, it was great. But Sioux fans travel. That's for sure. Hockey fans.
They'll travel, and then the rest of them just show up, right? They show up because they got nothing else in the state. Until North Dakota State's football team. Now, there used to be a big rivalry, and you didn't root for the other team. But they've been so good now for so many years that everybody in the region loves them. So everybody roots for them, too. The football team.
Yeah.
And the hockey team. The hockey team used to be the only thing that got national attention. Right, they are 7-time national championship winners in NCAA men's ice hockey, and so it's a big deal. The premier social events in Grand Forks, North Dakota, are the men's hockey games, and when Kim's restaurant was open, the evenings would go from the hockey venue to Kim's joint.
Yeah,
that's where all the cool people were.
It was packed every night after a game.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was awesome. Sometimes,
you know, if we had it on TV, they'd come in and watch the game and eat at the bar.
There you go. So it's warming up in North Dakota.
Nice.
Yeah. Email. Isn't it odd how different temperatures feel so different around the country? I've traveled a fair amount, and as much as I hate to admit that Mac is right, he absolutely is. In California, when it gets below 50, it is cold. In North Dakota, at 40, it doesn't seem as cold.
No.
And in Florida, when it gets below 60, you feel like you're going to die, for God's sakes. I'm not sure about that, but I believe it has to do with moisture in the air and things like that. Although I'm not a weatherman.
It's all about humidity.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. And it, I remember when I lived in Palo Alto, finishing high school there, I'd go to school with a windbreaker on, a button-down shirt, a T-shirt, you know, slacks, and you'd come home in your T-shirt. I mean, it would warm up so much, but it was cold. It was the wet cold, you know. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, just the way it is. All right, here's an email.
Yes.
Mac, I believe a while ago I heard you talking about with the chef, lasagna. And you were talking about how you had lasagna,
yes,
and you really like very, very thin pasta that goes between the layers.
Yeah.
My question is, if I were to try to make such a thing, where do I find that thin pasta if I don't make it myself?
Now they have them in sheets in the frozen section. And then they have these thin, dry noodles that you don't have to pre-cook. They have these noodles you just lay in the pan dry and then put your sauce and your whatever your layers in between the noodles. And they're no cooked noodles, and they cook while you have your lasagna, while you're baking your lasagna. And they're spectacular. They make it so easy to make lasagna that and you just have to check your grocery store or, you know, fancy food store or whatever. But most grocery stores, that's where we get ours, at the local grocery store. And there are no cooked noodles.
No cooked noodles. And you can buy them in different thickness, in different, I don't know what to call it, weights?
Well, some are wavy, some are flat sheets. The noodles in the store are usually curly noodles, you know how they are. Lasagna noodles in a package.
Right, right. But my question is, you know what I mean? The email question is you can get them and they'll be relatively thick. But what I was talking about was somebody did it homemade, and the lasagna was really light, right? It wasn't big, heavy pasta lasagna. It was kind of, you know, it was lighter lasagna with not as much pasta in it. And it was to die for.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's all right. So can you buy them different thicknesses, or is that something you can only do if you make it by hand and make your own?
No, I'm pretty sure you can buy different thicknesses. The ones we buy are thin. What's the brand that has the normal lasagnas? They're a little thicker than the ones we buy. If you don't make them, you can buy them thinner than the no cook noodles. For us, we think they're thinner than the regular lasagna noodle. That you remember the lasagna noodles that you had to pre cook
right
before you make your lasagna. Well, you don't have to do these no cook noodles. They're thinner.
You just thaw them out.
These are hard. This brand. And then they also have like that little zigzag.
Yeah.
And not super floppy.
Wait, just so everybody knows, this is we don't hear her very often this much, but this is the lovely Miss B. Beth, how are you today?
She just wrote down the name.
Wait, we want to hear her voice. She's a mythical figure here on All Marine Radio. Hi, Beth.
Hi, Mike.
How are you?
Good. The brand that I like best for making lasagna, it's Barilla. And I usually find them in Target. I mean, what you don't, and it is a no boil, no cooked noodle.
Right.
The ones that have the ripply little edges.
Right.
Will make a thick lasagna, so don't get those. If you like a real noodly lasagna, then you'll want the little ripply ones. But these are flat, or they almost look like a little zigzag washboard type thing.
And they're dry noodles. They're not frozen.
Yeah, they're a dry. So you just find them in the pasta section.
Got it.
But you'll be able to tell by just looking at them that they're thin.
Yes.
So you'll find it in the frozen food section? Or these no, these are just the flat. These are just flat, right, Varela?
Yeah, these are just a flat, hard, dry noodle.
Okay. All right. Well, that makes sense. Thanks, Beth. Any other advice for us?
Look on the box. It will say if it's a no boil, no cook. And if it doesn't say it, don't use it.
Yeah, they're thicker.
Got it. All right. Okay. There you have it, the lovely Miss B.
Hi, Mike.
There you have it, making her audio debut here on All Marine Radio. Before, she just yells from the, like, entry hall or something like that. Now she's, like, full-on co-hosting the segment. It's a first. That's a first in all the years we've been doing it. Miss B speaks. All right, so... Now you know what that means, Kim. Your days are numbered.
Now she's getting ice out of the refrigerator.
There you go. And there you go. So Beth is from, where's Beth from? Thompson?
Northwood,
that's right.
We did that benefit.
We did a benefit down there. They had a tornado that went through there. And no bueno, man. No bueno. But you know... And the one thing about small town America that's awesome is the way people take care of each other. And it's one of the coolest things about living in small town America. It's one of the coolest things about raising your kids in small town America. And so I would recommend it wholeheartedly. So we went down there. I was down there the day after the tornado. Went down there and did my radio show out of a gas station.
That was great fun.
Yeah, out of a gas station. And, you know, you're just telling the story of a community, what they need. And like I said, we were talking about this last week about going up to Roseau, but where we live, because of the flood...
Yes.
Where we lived, because of the flood, when these things would happen to other communities, you could not contain people from wanting to get there and help. Like we talked about the flood in Roseau. When these things would happen, because of the kindness was extended to the people that lived where Kim and I lived, they expected you to go find, you know, what can we do to help? What do they need?
Yes.
Do they need us to come down? Do they need us to bring trucks? Do they need chainsaws? What do they need? Because the farmers have everything. And they will stop what they're doing, because they're self-employed. They will stop what they're doing to come down and help. It's the coolest. So again, and that's why I say, right, turn off the news. That is not the country that you live in, man. That is not the country you live in. The country you live in is full of great people who do great things, and all you have to do is watch the way the nation behaves in a crisis. From 9/11 to Hurricane Katrina to the most recent hurricanes in the Carolinas and on the Gulf Coast, the way people behave takes your breath away. So, anyway.
It's cool. It is.
Yeah,
and,
no.
And when we had that, the flood of 97, people were calling from to the radio station to say, you know, if somebody needs a place to live, if you can make it up to Winnipeg, we got a house and no pets or no smokers, but it doesn't matter how many kids you have. I mean, people were so generous. It's very cool.
Yeah, it is. And then. I want to say in that tornado, one person was killed. You know, and people that live in trailers, right, in mobile homes. Those things are so light that when those kind of things happen, with all the debris flying through the air, whether it's something that penetrates it or whatnot, and so anyway, but it was. I would liken it to somebody took a really bad lawnmower that didn't have a sharpened blade, and they drove it like over the top of the city, right, at a height of about I don't know, 20 feet over the top of the city. A lawnmower set to that height, driven over the top of the city, and right, you had these uneven cuts of devastation that kind of went through the city. And you could see, you know, you clear as day, you could see the path. And so pretty amazing. I'd never seen anything like that. In our town, we had had straight-line winds of over 100 miles an hour one day. And Grand Forks, an older Midwest town, grew up during the fur trades, and there's trees, big trees, all over that city, and I want to say close to somewhere between 400 and 500 trees got knocked down in the city, and miraculously, nobody was killed. You kept waiting during the night and the following morning for the police to say, you know, we found a car that's been crushed with bodies inside of it, and didn't happen. And it happened really fast, too. Straight line winds or, I don't know, this upper atmospheric thing that they hit. And instead of swirling, you know, one drops below the other and hits the ground and keeps going. And it went from, like, I don't know, 40, 50 miles an hour to 100 miles an hour in a very, very short period of time. The sirens sound in a community when that happens. And so it goes. So, anyway, exciting stuff. When you live in the upper Midwest, what's the scariest weather event you've ever lived through, Kim? Or the scariest natural event you've been
outside of that flood? Just strong winds, 100 miles an hour coming through.
No, yours is easy though. The flood. The flood's
58 mile per hour winds Thursday night.
I would say the scariest thing I've ever seen is being aboard a ship at sea in the Northern Pacific.
Jeez.
And, and feeling like you're being tossed around like you're a bottle.
Uh-huh.
And like, thinking that, like, this ship's going to break.
Yep. Yeah, and I can't imagine being on a ship in a squall like that.
Oh, my God. No, and I'm talking about... And so we have our destroyers and the frigates that go with us, and they're getting tossed around like nothing, right? But when you're on an aircraft carrier and that thing's getting tossed around like it's nothing, that's what, you know, Mother Nature, I mean, she's a brute, right?
Yeah.
When you see the seas like that, those gigantic troughs, and then what happens is when you hit them right, the bow of the ship goes up, and if that trough is that thing's rising, it shoves the bow of the ship way up in the air, right? And they both kind of go together, and then the trough behind it is huge, and you have the ship, like, out of the water. And then it drops into this hole. And you're like, what just happened? And we're talking about a gigantic ship. And then you'll meet guys who came over to the to our ship.
Yeah.
And to see the dentist mostly, or to fly out or something like that. And you'd meet him. You'd be like, hey, how'd you guys do doing that? And they're like, oh, man, are you kidding me? You got to strap yourself into your rack if you're trying to sleep, if you can. The ship is going left to right, and you think it's going to roll, and it's going up and down like you can't believe. Everybody's puking. They said, like, yeah, what's it like here on the skyscraper in the water? And we're like, oh, my God, it was horrible. And then they just look at you like, shut up. Shut up. Do not say a word to me about this. So anyway, that's I think the scariest. I'm trying to think what other scary, you know, what was really weird. I'd never been in a dust storm, but I was in one in Iraq, and that was, I don't know that it was scary, but it was really weird. It's like a windstorm, but it's like, you have dirt in the air instead of fog. It's dirt. And there's dirt everywhere in everything. It's disgusting. And it was like about 125 degrees, too.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know who invented this one, they need to stop. We got the memo. Okay.
I was in one in Phoenix, and, you know, clear blue skies straight up, and from the west you could see this wall coming, this wall of sand. And, man, and then you button down everything and cover your car or pull it in a garage if you have one. And then when it passes, everything is just thick with sand.
Oh, it's really, and let me tell you, because of, you know, there was a war going on, and we had blown up this area that we lived in. Yeah. It was one of Saddam's, you know, palaces and the grounds and all of that. There was no windows.
Jeez.
So, yeah, let me just make it worse for you, okay? No windows. What the hell, man? Come on. And so we have boards in the windows. We have sand, so they don't cover the whole window because it's hot during the day. So there's about maybe a foot, 8 inches at the top, right? And so so you can get air in there. So, but if something explodes outside, the board will stop a lot of the shrapnel, or at least will collect it as it gets blown inside, right? But you leave a little space at the top, like, well, the shrapnel that'll come through there will hit the ceiling. Don't worry about that. We'll be sleeping on the floor, okay? So then it's like, we're going to die in here if we don't get more air, okay? But if we need more air, but we don't want the dirt. How do we do this? I wish we had a screen. Yeah, good one. We don't have screens.
Screen.
Exactly. You're living like, I don't know what you're living like. You're living like shit. But I think that's the scariest. Here's an email. The scariest thing I've been in, and I've been in mild earthquakes, but I do believe that tornadoes are more scary than earthquakes. Earthquakes pretty quick. By the time you figure out you're in one, it's over. Tornado, yeah. You normally hear it coming because of the sirens, and then you begin tracking it. And the bigger ones that roll through the Midwest, through Oklahoma, through Kansas, those things, oh, my God, are scary as hell. Because you just don't know where they're going and which way they're going to turn.
Interesting.
Yeah. To me, the part about the ocean was you're helpless, right? There's nothing you can do.
You hope the sucker doesn't sink. That's all you can do.
No. Like, I hope somebody knows what the hell they're doing. Because this is below average. Here's another lasagna question. If you're making light or lasagna, do you use the same kind of cheese, or is there something else you can use if you want to make it lighter?
You can use ricotta cheese.
But isn't that what you normally use, ricotta?
Well, that's one of the cheeses. You use ricotta, mozzarella, Parmesan. Use all three of those. Sometimes I'll add a fontina, which is kind of an Italian semi-soft cheese. Pecorino is a milder, saltier version of Parmesan. The healthiest thing to use is ricotta.
Ricotta. But we're talking about the lightest thing to use. So if, in keeping with the thinner noodles, if you're interested in making, and I don't mean essentially light in calories, but you know how lasagna can be, depending on how you rack it and stack it. Lasagna can be a pretty heavy dish. Or it can be, I was surprised the time I ate it, and it was so light. I was like, wow, I could eat more of this. Yay. Because I've had it. And one of my favorite, there's a restaurant in San Diego called Filippi's. It was a pizza place. But I loved their lasagna. They made lasagna, And they bring it to you in a bowl with a whole bunch of marinara sauce.
Yeah.
I love that stuff. But it was heavy lasagna. I will say that. It was heavy lasagna. And so when I had this light lasagna, I was like, oh, this is bonbon.
Yeah. Well, you can make a light lasagna. You just don't put the sausage and all the meat in there. You just make either a cheese lasagna, cheese and tomato sauce, and noodles. And or you can use a bechamel sauce.
Bechamel.
And that's what I like to use. And then I put dollops of ricotta in between dollops of sauce.
Now, so if you were looking to make it lighter, would you simply put less ricotta? You just put, you know, instead of more, you'd put less.
Yes.
Got it. Because the thing, even though we want to make it lighter, we don't want to sacrifice the taste, right?
You don't want to mess with the flavor of it.
Yeah, there you go.
And you need layers. You need a bite of sauce and cheese and every bite and noodle. And, you know, when you press the noodle down on that layer, it spreads it out a little bit, and then when you cook it, it spreads even more.
So that's what we love.
And that's what you want.
That's what you want. Another question. Mac, I'm curious, what is the chef's favorite kind of lasagna? Calories aside, weight of the dish aside, what is his favorite kind of lasagna?
I like a lasagna with kind of a veggie lasagna with eggplant, with peppers, bechamel sauce. And how I make it is I put the marinara sauce on the bottom. Then I put a layer of noodle. And then I'll put some dollops of sauce and a dollops of bechamel sauce and then some cheese, light cheese on it, and then eggplant on top of that. And you can put red, green, and yellow peppers that have been sliced or chopped, however you want it. And you have to saute those a little bit. You don't want to cook them hard, overcook them. And then you do that same layer again, and you do two separate layers. So you have noodle, filling, noodle, filling, noodle, and then on the top of the last noodle, I spread bechamel sauce all over it, and then I'll sprinkle Parmesan, and I'll cover it with foil, or if it's a square dish that has a lid, you put the lid on, you cook it, and then you take the lid off the last 20-15 minutes you're cooking it.
Yeah.
To brown the Parmesan and get that crust. And then when you cut through it, you get that sauce. You get everything. And then when you plate it, you can have you sit it in a ladle of marinara sauce, or you can pour the marinara sauce over the pasta. I kind of like to sit it in the sauce if it's a bowl or a plate. It doesn't matter. And then sprinkle some parsley on top. And there you have it. That's my favorite lasagna.
And that's your favorite. Here's another email about lasagna. I love Italian food, Mac.
Yeah.
My question for the chef is, what does he serve with the lasagna? That's an art too. So, with your lasagna meal, what would you serve with it? Anything?
You serve a salad. You can also serve garlic bread. You get a loaf of. We've discussed our favorite garlic bread. How to do that? You cut a baguette in half or a loaf of ciabatta, and you rub it with garlic butter and sprinkle Parmesan on it and a little paprika and throw it in the oven and bake it until the Parmesan gets kind of crisp and the garlic and garlic butter melts into the bread. And then you can slice that and serve it with a salad and lasagna. In Italy, they serve lasagna as a course, and you have an antipasto. You know, that's like cold cuts and olives and things like that, peppers. And then you have a lasagna, a pasta course, and then a first course and a second course. You can have a fish course and a meat course, and then dolce. Your dessert.
Okay.
But the size portion of lasagna you get is about a third of what we would serve here in America, what I serve when I served. In America, that's the main dish, lasagna. So you want to have a salad with that. That's really helpful. And garlic bread. Because you want to wipe up every bit of sauce, gooey stuff that's left around on the plate. That's what I would do.
All right. There you have it. Lasagna is yeah. A great dish. It is a great dish.
Yes.
Mac, I'm curious.
You can also serve it with meatballs. Sausages, you have a big platter of that, and they're all cooked in a bowl of marinara sauce, and you have your lasagna, and then you can spoon out some sausage, a couple of sausage pieces, or one or two meatballs. The meatballs are about 2 inches across. You don't
need monster. None of this little kid stuff, okay? When we talk meatballs, yeah. We're talking like meat steak ball.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you're having spaghetti and meatballs, you would have them. I've seen meatballs as big as softballs, and you get one meatball.
Let me ask you this. In terms of preparing it,
yes.
Is that a better way? So you prepare the lasagna. If you wanted, say, prepare sausages, you could take a sausage and then put marinara sauce, and then you combine it. Or you could have a meat sauce, or you could. I would think the marinara sauce and then with sausage and meatballs would make the most versatile dish. And you could accommodate, if somebody just wants a vegetarian version, they could take it out of the pan. If they wanted it with sausage, they could certainly do that with marinara sauce or with meatballs.
Exactly. That's the whole point. That's a good observation, Mike.
How about that?
I've seen it served, you have your plain vegetable lasagna or no veggies in the lasagna. Just your sauce and cheese, a little bechamel sauce, that helps lift it up and make the layers higher. And then sides of, I've seen different types of sausages, and they're cooked, and then they're thrown in with marinara sauce. And just a side. And then you put it in a big bowl or a platter and pass it around with family style. and people can put a meatball and a piece or two of sausage on their plate, or a couple of meatballs and a couple of pieces of sausage. It depends on your appetite.
Absolutely,
it's a great way to do it.
Hey, Mac, I know you're Irish and are culturally challenged when it comes to the Italians, but I would tell you that that's how Italians do it.
Yes,
we
it is.
Like different things, and we don't
yes.
make it one way. So lasagna would be the base dish, and you would have both meatballs. It would be delicious. You would have incredible sausage with it, and you would kind of make your own meal. So lasagna, as you know it, with meat sauce, is not the way I grew up eating it at my grandmother's
yes.
table, who was FOB Italia. yeah, I am.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. You have a whole platter of meatballs and sausages, and you help yourself. And then there's a little lasagna. And it could be a meat sauce that you pour over it if you want.
Right.
But mainly it's the sausage and the meatballs. Sausage.
Sausage. The, well, that's cool. No, I mean, it's a help. Because I think if you're a non-Italian, right, the meat is in the lasagna.
Yeah.
No, I will tell you this.
I don't like doing that.
The lighter version, my mom made a very heavy version of lasagna with the wavy noodles and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I mean, and my mom, I don't
and think. And inside the lasagna.
Right. I don't think my mom ever made anything that I didn't truly love. I mean, my mom was a great cook, but we weren't Italian. So I have this to say about that. When I ate the very, very light lasagna, I was like, the marinara was delicious, and the noodles did not overwhelm the rest of the dish, if that makes sense. It was very light, and it was, because, I mean, when somebody says, we're going to, you know, we're having lasagna, you got to make room for that, man.
Yes.
You got to make room
That's
for that.
That's a serious meal in this country.
Yeah, it's a straight-up serious meal. So, anyway.
In Italy, it's just the course. It's not the whole enchilada. You eat a lot more in your Italy, and lasagna is just part of it.
I see. Here's another question. Mac, the Italians have very distinct ways of doing vegetables. I wondered what the chef would say about Italian vegetables and the way they do their vegetables. Any recommendations? Anything he could share with us or would share with us? Chef?
Yes. One of the, my favorite way is frita mista. That's fried vegetables. And they're mixed. There's cauliflower. There's artichoke hearts. There's carrots, broccoli, and they make a batter. And it's like a tempura. It's a lighter batter. It's not real heavy.
Right.
Which means you put a little cornstarch in your flour to make that thing, everything puff up. And then you throw the vegetables in there and make sure that they're totally coated. And then you drop them in oil that's at 375. And they have these little countertop, you can buy at Bed Bath & Beyond, countertop French fries. That it's one basket. And you put your frita mista in there and then drop it in the fryer and cook the veggies. And they'll have a little bite to them, a little crunch. But when the batter is golden brown, then you pull it out. You throw it in a little paper towel. You salt it. and then put it on a platter and have at it. And artichokes are great steamed also, and that's real good. But deep fried, they're the best.
You know what I've become a fan of? And this is just in the last year. Deep fried pickles.
Yeah.
I love some deep fried pickles.
And yes, those are delicious. And they're, you take pickles, you can take pickle slices or pickle spears, you throw them in a batter and then deep fry them.
Yeah.
Or you can take a pickle spear, wrap a piece of the slice of cheese, like Havarti, cheese around the pickle, and then wrap it in a wonton skin like an egg roll.
Oh.
And then you deep fry it. Oh, mercy. they're quite popular around here. Deep-fried pickles.
What did you... in your lexicon, is mercy...
They call it toothy pickles. What?
Is mercy higher or lower than testify? Because testify is kind of like the ultimate, I think, praise from you.
Yeah, testify. Have mercy, testify.
So is mercy the same as testify, or is it up, above it or below it?
It's mezzo.
Same
either
thing.
Way.
All right.
You can go either way.
All right. Just checking. The here's an email about artichokes. Mac, you just mentioned artichokes. Where does that thing come from? Is there a certain part of the world that artichokes grow in, and therefore they were indigenous to them?
They grow everywhere. They grow everywhere. They grow in California. We used to go over to Half Moon Bay, and there were fields of artichokes. That's north of Santa Cruz in California, Half Moon Bay. Now it's a whole retirement community. I don't know where they grow them now in California. But they grow in Italy. They grow in Israel, the Middle East. Yeah. Yep, the artichokes are big, big plants. And you just pick them they're good. You don't eat the whole leaf. You know, there's a whole thing to artichokes. Trimming them, and you don't eat the fuzzy part of the heart of the artichoke.
Yeah, I didn't really know that. It took me a while before somebody, it might have been you that taught me, you might have been raving about how much you loved artichokes, and I was like, how do you eat them? You can't eat them. I tried to eat them once, and you're like, oh my God, you're so stupid. I said, well, how do you eat them? And I think actually the first time I really ate them was with you. You showed me how to eat them.
Yeah.
And it might have been in your joint.
I'm pretty sure. I showed you how to eat an artichoke. And, you know, and you get to the heart of the artichoke heart. And there's, you
that?
Eat all the leaves down to this little crown with real soft leaves. And you can eat the tips of those. And you dip them in a sauce. Could be a mayonnaise or a romelard or a hollandaise sauce, whatever they make, and then there's a little fuzzy cap on top of the artichoke heart, and you have to cut that off because that's eating a fuzz ball, and it'll choke you. You know, you can't digest or swallow it.
Even with a lot of good sauce on it.
Yeah, not even.
Earth to Kimmy.
Yeah, that was, I just canceled a phone call.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, somebody was calling in. No number. No name.
We don't do that. The you think they would know better? One more email here. Mac, my grandmother used to make this wonderful dish. She was Italian with artichokes. I think it is amazing how everyday people could learn to take things that you could buy without spending a lot of money and turn them into just absolutely delicious things. My grandmother was such a person. I would see artichokes on other menus and I would try them and I hated them. I only love my grandmother's artichokes and the way she incorporated them into a variety of dishes that she made. God bless her. Yes. I miss her. That is amazing, though, yes?
Yes, it is. You can, you know, I used to do an artichoke dip at Sanders. You can you see artichoke spinach dips around. You can saute artichoke hearts in olive oil and fry them up with some other veggies, some peppers. It's real, real good. But, yeah, artichoke hearts, you can't beat them. You can buy them in cans, and you drain the cans, rinse them a little bit, and then you can fry them up or batter them and deep fry them or saute them, however you want.
Got it. No, the Italians, I mean, are, I'm partial if, to Italian and Mexican foods in my life. And, but again, that light way to make lasagna, not the heavy way. I mean, so you can have a meal that has salad, lasagna, and then, you know, some bread and wine. It's an absolutely delicious collision of all those flavors inside of your mouth.
It's magnificent. When, to have a salad and garlic bread and right. Lasagna.
The wine. What? Here's another email, Mac. What's Kim's favorite Italian dish, specifically that he ate in Italy? So, what did you eat in Italy that made you scream, testify?
Tortellini alla panna.
Explain it.
Tortellini is this little pasta ring that has a meat filling in it, and I could never master making them. I can make the bigger cappellettis, but the tortellini, and then they're boiled and tossed in fresh cream, heavy cream, and you cook that with a little bit of peas, green peas, and that was a dish that I would have as my course, a pasta course, just about every time I had a meal in Florence. Because Monday was my day off, and we'd go to this restaurant, and we'd have two meals. One meal was at Camillo's, and we'd start out with a little fritto mista, and then we'd have a pasta dish, and my buddy and I, who worked there, Mooks, you've met him.
Right.
We each have a liter of wine ourselves. They serve a fiasco, which is a 1.5 liter. And so we'd split one of those. And then we'd go run around Italy, or Florence, and we'd go to the museums and stuff and chase skirts or whatever we did. And then we'd go have a dinner at night. And then go to this club and dance, and then take the last bus up to Fiesole and walk out to our house, our farmhouse. And but yeah, tortellini alla panna, it's called.
All right.
And you can buy tortellini in the grocery stores. You can buy them dried, or you can buy them in a refrigerator. refrigeration section. But that was my favorite pasta dish. Yeah.
All right, sir. Yeah. Big plans for the weekend now that you're out from the
I'm going to have Sunday for dinner, tortellini alla panna.
Now that we've talked about it. You know what? It does. I do the same thing. We'll talk about something and then I'll say I have to eat that, man. It sounded too good.
Oh God, it's deluxe. With a little Parmesan cheese on it. I can't help myself.
All right. Well, good luck to the hockey team, and thank you very much for the Italian food education, and have a great weekend.
You too, Matt, and best to your family and my little goddaughter.
Oh, she was really excited yesterday. She swims the free, the 100 free. Okay, so she's been dropping seconds off her time. And so it's really the first full year she swam, and so she likes it. But a friend of hers swims the breaststroke, and they threw Colleen in, and so Colleen's been about two or three seconds behind her consistently. But then last week she closed it down to 1 second, and she said, "I'm gonna beat her, Dad." So yesterday she beat her. She said, "I was so excited, I got tears in my eyes." I said, "So
that's sweet." Yeah. I tell you that you didn't realize you had a little jockette on your head.
Little jockette. So then, then tonight she's in a quinceañera for a friend of hers. And they went to practice earlier this week, and the friend's mother said, "You guys are terrible." So Colleen's got to go deal with that tonight. And so I have to tell you a funny story, though, real quick before you leave. I reached out to a U.S. senator yesterday and called his office and talked to somebody answering the phone. That was not very impressive. But they do deliver messages. And I got a call back this morning from a girl by the name of Senator Tom Cotton's office. He's a Republican from Arkansas. And he had some very spot-on things to say during the hearings on the military housing stuff. And so that's why I called his office. So she called me, and I said, "I want to put you in touch with some people I've met, some women that I've met, who are really, really smart, and they're really smart about all of this issue, from the alligator nearest the boat is get people to save housing that doesn't hurt them and their children," yes. Right? The second one is put the things in these contracts and then create the oversight necessary from the military side to supervise these people to make sure they're doing what they're doing. The third part is financially take care of people for their out-of-pocket expenses and financially take care of the people that will need health care for the rest of their lives because of the damage they've received from mold and lead paint. So these women understand all of those issues, okay? So she called me this morning. She gives me her email. I got to sell. So now I send an email, and I CC the two women that I want her to meet on it, and I send it and said, "Hey, want to link all of us together, blah, blah, blah. Thank you very much." So she sends back this really nice email, really excited to meet you guys and the two women. And she said, you have my cell number. You have my email. Please reach out so we can touch gloves and do this." And so I thought, touch gloves, man, that's rich, isn't it? Because girls wear white gloves, but it's a reference to boxing gloves. We're going to go kick somebody's ass.
I took it.
And I love that. I was like, whoa, I like that. We'll touch gloves. Yeah. So anyway.
That's cool.
It is cool. Anyway, so, but you know what? And I thought, first of all, thank you. Not everybody called back. She said, "Oh, no, we're on this. We're all over this. So I appreciate you reaching out to me." So anyway, so hopefully good things will happen.
That's good news.
Yeah, that is good news. All right, bud, thank you for the visit. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right.
Have a good week.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
That is the one and only Almarine Radio Head Chef. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, the man, the myth, the legend himself, Mr. Construction, Michael Musselman, joins us here on a Friday.